to the Vibrant Living Network. Have you ever wondered what is possible beyond possible? What is the thing you've been wondering and inquiring about? Are you just feeling stuck and don't know why? Are you thinking or are you seeing? Seeing allows us to expand and have this other experience. We want to invite you for that wake-up call. We want to invite your spirit, your soul, so to be more alive, more connected. Glenn Brooks has been a life coach for over 33 years, author of Divorced to Patterns, Not Each Other, an explorer of what is possible. He has worked with people all around the world. Join us for a wake-up conversation, a dialogue with you. We will have some of the most interesting contributors. We will be talking to some of the most interesting people and have some of the most resourceful teachers, wisdom-filled people from around the world join us. Share your voice, ask the questions, become free of the known into a new world of possibility. We are going to talk about all the things you wonder about: how to live, how to heal, how to connect, how to love, how to be seen. Your life is precious. Enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Glenn Brooks. It's wonderful being with you today on Thursday, another Thursday. And I want to welcome you all. It's wonderful hearing from you. And I think you'll enjoy what we're going to be exploring today deeply. Lisa LaRose, who signed up this lifetime to be a family member, co-explorer, a wonderful, wonderful encourager, inspirer. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you, Glenn. Good to
see you. Well, it's a treasure being with you. You know, I'm really happy about our format today. Just making sure. Okay, cool. All right. So we have John Adago with us, who's 12 or 40 years. He's studied some of the, not just studied, he's dedicated and lived a lot of people would say things that are out of the reach of a lot of people, you know, teaching such as Gurdjieff, Satchidananda, Muktananda. There's a lot of teachers that impact people spiritually. A lot of people, I think, 50 years later, 3 years later, still don't know what to do with it. A lot of teachings are not necessarily integral. In other words, they help you in some areas, other areas not. I think we're really discovering, this is one of the, this is a vibrant living thing, is what makes something integral, meaning that you can bring it to one area of your life, you know, your relationships, you can bring it to your physical body. Now, I feel one of the most juicy topics that is overlooked or misunderstood, that I feel has hidden wonders to it and can miraculously change our lives, is asking. We do it many times during the day. And I want to get into this as it relates to spirituality and being a practical mystic. Asking is one of the most profound things we do. So the name of this show and this series is called How to Ask for the Moon and Get It. How to Ask for the Moon and Get It. And it's on the wonders of asking. And, God, Lisa, there's so many applications here. And I want to thank Melissa and a whole bunch of people for sharing. There's two sides of this. Please, you read the most beautiful quote. Before we have John on and really dive into this, I mean, you read a quote this morning from Gurdjieff, the legendary, I guess you'd say, mystic of over the last, you know, I guess he was alive in the 40s, but he was such a catalyst for a lot of people inquiring, how could it seem we could live a regular life and be so asleep? How can we live a life and not even know? We're not in a sense we're conscious, or as Eckhart Tolle did once when he showed a video of a city from the 30s, and it shows people scurrying about and doing this and doing that, and he said, and then they die. Did they even know where they were here? Did they have any awareness? What was the quote, Lisa, that you came up with? Because I enjoyed that quote. I want to contrast it with something else, or share it in conjunction with another thing.
So we were talking about the hidden wonder of what real love is, and Gurdjieff said, real love is a cosmic force which goes through us. Crystal love, it becomes the greatest power in the world. And so that was what we were, when in the exploration of the remarkable, we were going to take a look at what it really means to have real love. What is that? Is it, physical love or is it a spiritual? Where does that come from? And I know that's a topic that's near and dear to your heart, Glenn, and in the relational work that you do. And so, and you were going to delve into how that's related to asking.
Yeah, I'm here, Glenn, if you just...
Oh, welcome, John.
John, welcome. John, why don't you...
I've been on for a couple of minutes. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, John, why don't you go ahead? You know, I was going to say to people about you and about your work, a lot of people I know go to ashrams, they go to retreats, and we're going to dive into this. But one of the most, I would say the things that a lot of people have shared over the years, interesting to get Lisa's, you know, insight of this. People have gone to many seminars, they've gone to many, many different ashrams, they've been around a lot of spiritual teachers, and a lot of them have felt that what they asked for, what they would have liked to receive didn't happen. And of course, some people, you know, felt an unusual grace. So I think in the spiritual world, in this other world, asking and receiving is kind of an interesting hidden topic, because a lot of times we're taught in our human conditioning, don't ask. Or is it in for what I was sharing? I was learning about the syndrome as a human being grows as a baby. It's called the interrupted movement. So the interrupted movement is kind of like when a child wants a baby, a young adult, and the parents ignore the child. So the child stops asking. So in the spiritual movement, you know, what happens, a lot of people get into spirituality in an unintegrated way, meaning that they haven't fulfilled a lot of their human needs, their deep passionate needs. In some ways, they get on a spiritual path and they get more suppressed, more disconnected, or they're a total mess between meditation retreats. So I wanted to kind of catch this from your perspective and share more about this thing about how to ask for the moon and receive it, because it seems like in your life, John, you didn't give up. You didn't get kind of beat up. You didn't, you know, so there's a lot of people, you know, like when I tell them we're doing the series, they maybe read some books by Gurdjieff, or they maybe read some books by Krishnamurti or Satchidananda. So they have an intellectual understanding, but they don't know how to apply it to human challenges. They don't know how to, you know, so as an example, the interrupted movement isn't just for children. It's definitely in the adult world. How many people listening could truly deeply ask for the love they would like, or even become aware of what it is? So awareness and awakeness as it relates to asking. So let's start off with that question. The spiritual life and your experience with the practical spiritual life, you had to ask and kind of open up some doors that weren't available to you as an aspiring explorer and finder, if you will, because the doors, you told me that people didn't even tell you there were groups. So maybe we could explore this topic with you personally around asking and receiving and becoming illumined through asking and receiving.
Well, it begins by acquiring knowledge of a special kind. It's actually wisdom. It's knowledge that would lead you to live a fulfilled and happy life. But knowledge is like a medicine. If it isn't taken, it doesn't do much good. Gurdjieff spoke of what he called the work. He wasn't just dispensing knowledge to people. He was motivating them to make intelligent, serious, guided efforts to raise their level of understanding and being, to become more than how they found themselves to be in their everyday walking around condition. What he indicated is that we're not living up to our full potential. It was apparent if you were in his company, and often when you're in the company of some of the teachers that you would meet in an intensive or on a retreat, that man or woman, that teacher, is manifesting a higher level of understanding and being than the people you meet in your everyday life. And they are willing to inspire you and provide you with some knowledge and guidance. But then you have to take the next step. The next step is that you apply this wisdom in your everyday life, that you begin to actually make efforts to observe yourself, become aware of yourself, as you walk through your daily activities. And then under the light of this awareness, some refinement takes place in your speech and action.
No, I guess what I'm wondering about, John, at a very personal level, let's say people coming to spend a weekend with you at a retreat, because a lot of people would like to apply this stuff. So one of the things I noticed in my own experience early on, and we'll get Lisa's comment, is I noticed that when my parents did certain things, I'm sure everybody has this experience, it's not unique to me, I would avoid interacting with them. Or I remember there was one period of my life, my parents didn't like that I played tennis. I remember they wanted me to get a second job. And I remember I just instead of going to the front door, I climbed into my window. It was sort of a conflict. Now, I didn't get this whole world of asking, the blessing of asking. I didn't really understand because I was lost in the surface level of the emotions that my parents and my friends around me had. That was sort of the asleepness was. There was a world of constant reaction, and you very rarely, as an example, when you got up in the morning, tell me if you guys had a different experience, that your parents would say to you, you know, today I would like you to fear forward, stop and take an exhale, things sometimes are going to be scary, and get a sense of your own rhythm, that wonderful rhythm that lives in you is almost like a divine beat, and come here and let me hug you before you go today, because I want you to feel... not just hear my words, but know that I'm with you. You know. So what happens is as human beings, we gain regulation through other human beings, through our contact. And for I know as an example, when I reached to this a different level of awareness, it was hard to just get these things from a book, because it would say things in a book, but it was actually through people. Like my first experience, I'll give an example. Was I met this doctor in New York City. He was in his 80s, and he was just he was very profound in his way. He was in his 80s, very alive. And I went to see him at the same time someone else went to see him, and I noticed we had very different experiences. And I saw that the way that I asked him to assist me, and this asking is verbal and nonverbal, but he just really showed up in a really deep way for me. And the other guy was very frustrated. In other words, he went there too, but the way he was asking didn't make that human connection. So I'm just sort of wondering, because it's a very lofty, beautiful idea, is the idea that universal loves, the way Lisa read the quote, and that cosmic love could show up. I've had that experience. And yet I also know that from our human conditioning, and maybe that's the difference between reading a book and being with you at a live retreat, John, is that you could, in some sense, take people by the hand and give them a different feeling in their nervous system. Because being with someone who's transferring this as a human being to human being is a totally different world beyond just the words. So is there anything at a personal level in terms of how you receive this that impacted you as a human being that you felt was transferable to other human beings? Like, are people listening to you right now? What's your personal experience or recommendation for people who want to cut the veil of being there in an ashram or someplace, and they feel they haven't been able to connect and ask, and it's not, things aren't getting solved for more meditation, as an example.
What was that last sentence you said?
Things aren't getting solved by more meditation.
Well, yes. Well, after you meditate or contemplate, then you have to get up out of the chair and walk into your life. And bring that same stillness and intense awareness that perhaps you touched during a practice into your day. So how is it that I wake up during the day? Right? Well, it begins with a simple awareness of oneself, that I'm aware of my body. I'm aware of the breeze on my face. I look up, I see the sky. More importantly, I'm aware of what's around me and the people in front of me. And then something has to shift within me, because we spend most of our days walking about satisfying our own desires. Every impression that comes in, the habitual response is, well, what's in it for me? How does this further my personal desires? How does this enrich my life? When we encounter a master teacher, what we meet is someone who's operating from a different perspective. He's not considering his own well-being. He's considering your well-being. His only wish is to perform his duty to be of use to himself and to everyone around him, to in fact be of use to the creation. Now, it takes a bit of time and effort to reach a point where you're even a little bit of use to yourself, much less to other people. Because we've certainly observed that as often as not, we have trouble getting out of our own way. Our desires tend to pull us in conflicting directions. So first we begin to know thyself. Contemplate actually, what is it that I really want right now, today, or this week? What is it that I think will actually fulfill me, lead me to a sense of well-being, make me a better man, a better father, a better spouse, a better citizen? And then I begin to pursue that. One of the ways that one begins to pursue that is what Gurdjieff said, and many others, is it's quite difficult to do this work alone. You need the benefit of a group of people with a common aim who are under the same spiritual guidance or knowledge, and they're attempting to apply these ideas practically in their everyday life. We need the verification of other people in a group reporting back to us their attempts to wake up, their attempts to grow beyond their normal habitual behavior. And of course, you also need the benefit of some people or a teacher that's further along on the way. I mean, any activity that we get involved in, whether it be learning an instrument or learning a trade or learning a trick, the speed of learning is improved tremendously with the help of a teacher, with the help of someone who is where we want to go and can help us take these steps by providing knowledge, correct knowledge. And so
we got a mini pause coming in a moment.
Okay.
You're listening to the Vibrant Living Network. John, why don't you give out your website? Since we have a moment what's your website?
It's thejourneyback.net.
Thejourneyback.net. You know, as John's talking, thank you. We're going to talk about how this interacts with the brain and being relational. And stay with us here on the Vibrant Living Network, along with Lisa Lewis, get Lisa's comments as well. Stay with us.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth. Spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Hello, I'm Glenn Brooks, Vibrant Living Network, along with John Adago, East Meets West, and other books that share about how you could reuse some of the most powerful teachings of the mystics. We're talking today about how to ask for the moon and receive it. And John's was just sharing with us, and Lucia LaRose with us, talking about this path. And what I want to get into in a moment, I want to do a review, because we went to this amazing restaurant the other night, and I just wanted to review it because it was out of this world. We went to Thai Place, and what we encountered was Simon, the owner, or the singing owner. He not just brought us our food, but he put his heart and soul in the food. He spent time with us, and I started to realize why people drive a couple hours just to visit Simon's place, Thai Place. And I have with us one of my associate producers, Adora LaRose, who's going to share with you. We'll give you the website. And so if you're in Western Massachusetts in the South Hadley area, which is right down the block from Mount Holyoke College, we just had a wondrous experience. The food was delicious. They had gluten-free food. And we mostly hung out a lot with Simon, who was the wonder of our the whole experience. So briefly, Adora, share with people, say hello, and then share some of the dishes that we had so we could roll on with how to ask for the moon and receive it. How to really, as a human being, receive another whole level of energy and awareness and connection. Go ahead, Adora.
Well, welcome. Thank you. We had just an incredible feast. We started our meal with this incredible, delicious chicken soup that just warmed our bellies and a papaya salad. And honestly, my favorite dish was their fresh rolls. And he came up to us and served us this dish with these two sauces. And he said, "This sauce has my heart and soul." And let me tell you, this sauce really did have this just incredible, delicious soulfulness to it that warmed us, and his energy warmed us. And we followed that with this incredible, perfect balance of creamy and spicy Thai curry squash with chicken and imperial lamb. That was the most tender lamb, I gotta say, right, Glenn?
It was amazing. Give out the website, because I want to tell you guys, it was just wonderful, and sharing this with Adora was wonderful. Give out the website, and so people could go check it out. Thai Place, our highest recommendation.
You can look up Thai Place. They're on 480 Granby Road, South Hadley, Massachusetts.
And what's their website? Their website?
Yeah, actually, they do. Let me just check it. Yeah. I got it right here for you.
All right.
ThaiPlaceRestaurant.biz.
ThaiPlaceRestaurant.biz. Thank you, Adora.
Yeah.
All right.
Wonderful. And I got to say, Allie, the server, sweetest lady.
Oh, yes. She was a sweetheart. Yes. Allie was. I'm glad you mentioned that. All right. How to ask for the moon. Thank you, Adora. How to ask for the moon and receive. Oh, you're really welcome. You know, Lisa, so what's changed? We listen to John, and we talk about consciousness. We talk about the path of consciousness. What's changed over the last 40 years is actually also the brain, the ability to see the impact of the brain and the nervous system. What's your comments, Lisa? As you listen to John, what speaks to you about what John said, and what's real for you in terms of asking and anything that along this topic of how to make this more real and deliberate in our lives?
Actually, you know what? I want to share with you, John, and you didn't really get a chance to finish it. On the last show, you brought up the firefly. And as you were talking about the light that, you know, is illuminated, and you know, I'd really love for you to expand a little bit more on that topic, because, you know, and in speaking about, you know, Gurdjieff's thoughts on real love, you know, there was so much in that story that touched my heart, and I could really see it becoming another one of your children's stories. That it just so warmed my heart, and I'm wondering if you could just finish a little bit more about those insights that you were sharing about, you know, the light within and where the attractions are and what draws us to it.
Yes, it's in any given moment, we can raise our state of awareness right in the moment. Now, we know with just a little bit of self-observation that we walk around and there are a lot of random thoughts and associations and our attention gets pulled here and there. And someone says something and then we think of something else that happened 3 days ago. And then that leads to another thought about something else. And pretty soon mentally we're on a beach somewhere in Hawaii or something. And in reality, we're here on a winter day in New York. So from this random state, and I'm not saying this is all the time, but our attention tends to drift in and out of the moments. And what's possible for us is in any given moment, when we wish to, we can simply come to ourselves right here in the present. Come out of this inner world of thoughts and feelings, which really is not real, and put our attention out on the people and things around us. Now, in that moment, I know who I am, and I know what my duty is. Often, through the day, something happens, and in that moment, we immediately know what the appropriate response is. A simple example, we're walking down the street, and there's a tin can in front of me, and sometimes we just mechanically, automatically pick it up, drop it in the next receptacle. But in another moment, something else comes in. We see what we should do or could do, but then we just ignore it. Or something says, it's not my job, or I'm too busy, or I don't have the time, or whatever. And so we step over what in that moment we clearly understood to be right action. We meet someone who clearly needs to be listened to, that wants just to be heard, that wants to take a moment and touch another human being and talk to them a little bit. And there are times when we stop and do that. And there are times when we feel we just don't have the time, we're on our way to an appointment, and we sort of brush them aside. It's in these moments when we can make a conscious decision. And the decision is, do I do my duty, or do I pursue my personal interests? There's a sentence in the Upanishads that says, the good is one, the pleasant another. Both command us. Habitually, we choose the pleasant and avoid the unpleasant. But a mature individual begins to choose the good. He begins to choose his duty. In the beginning of our country, with our founding fathers, the sense of duty was strong. Duty and honor were prime motivators in people's behavior. Was also true at the height of the Roman Empire and the height of the Greek civilization. In time, those impulses tend to weaken. And we see now, you know, that to speak about doing one's duty, to be patriotic, is almost something to be a subject of ridicule. As these impulses weaken, so does the sense of family, so does community, so do nations. So we begin to see the relationship between the level of consciousness, the level of goodness in individuals, and the level of community and society and family. Mm-hmm. So for
well, you know,
time,
I wanna,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, the only thing that comes to mind, John and Lisa, is I think at a certain point, maybe during the 60s, I think what happened was, or people started to, I guess what happened was they felt they had to, they started to enforce these things or felt they had to be in a certain script about these things. And there was like a big revulsion or something. So in other words, when people started to live from this idea of have to, they disconnected from the spiritedness, kind of like, you know, they felt, how do I say this? Well, I guess people, as an example, in your distinction between doing the right thing and sort of going with maybe pleasure, I think what's confusing for a lot of people on the spiritual path, as an integral path, is where warmth and kind of taking care of themselves, taking care of their partner come in. I think with some of these things, there's some rigidities that, you know, there's some rigidities or some armor. You know, Wilhelm Reich said something really brilliant. Wilhelm Reich was a psychiatrist in the mid-40s. And he acknowledged that the problem with what the Nazis were was going on. He said they had total body armor. They had no sense they had bodies. They were like total robots. And so he said that character armor is the thing that distinguishes a conscious human being and not a conscious. In other words, the armor that we have in our bodies cuts us off from the life pulse and actually having – he actually talked about orgone, our life energy, and orgasm. So what I saw happen in a lot of the spiritual – I'd love your comment on this. A lot of – what happened for a lot of people, they took some of this armor and drove it into their spiritual practices, and they became more rigid and enforced. And then the idea of family for a lot of people, because they felt disconnected from their families, they felt this sense of forced obligation rather than inspired movement. And so as it circles back to asking, is that if you don't feel good about – if you don't have the sense that – that receiving is this asking and receiving is these gifts, you can become more mechanical. You do become more mechanical in the sleep. So it seems like there's a third way that, and I think this is now in our times. I think people don't have the sense of being, they don't have the sense of this unarmored experience where they sense energy in their bodies. And then they have these spiritual notions. They have to do things differently. So they take in a false guilt or drivenness. And I think that's part of what's going on right now is people don't feel this natural flow and ease, and they feel more obligated and drained. Obviously, that's what's showing all the brain scans are showing that people have a lot more cortisol. They're much more drained. If you go back, it's a different kind of brain. So, well, Lisa, your comments on this. We're living with a different kind of brain in a world where we're doing more practices, and yet people are getting drained from a lot of practices right now. Because these practices, in some sense, they're ageless, and yet the modern person a lot of times has no idea how to drain. They don't know how to deal with some of these things that happened to them early in their childhood. So we're in our modern times dealing with our brain, this experience of asking, and the things that got kind of interrupted. I'm just running by Lisa as another person who's been in an inquiry. What do you see, Lisa, when we talk about armoring and getting disconnected and then feeling forced or obligated to be different?
Well, no, I think that John brought up a really good point about, you know, just – being more conscious and to be able to really deepen the connections within life, you know, whether it be a can that you don't see, you pretend not to see, or a human being on the street that you pretend not to see because, you know, it's uncomfortable for you.
But, yeah.
You know, just to take a moment and, you know, soften the eyes and open the heart is really what this whole journey is about. And I think that that's what, you know, Gurdjieff, you know, tried to these other individuals that were of that time, you know, to kind of put you into a different space to really get you to see, you know, what are you really seeing? Are you unconsciously going through life only meeting the needs that are your own immediate needs or expanding into a greater awareness? And, you know, John, I really appreciate the quotes that, you know, you shared from the Upanishad. John, I've heard, and it really, really touches my heart. And so, you know, and you're in a city in New York where to the, you know, bad reputation for people not being aware. People in a hurried state, right? You know, you're on a busy street. So, you know, for you to even work and take that on and live in a city such as New York, it's not an easy task. And so when you find yourself in that place and, you know, you find yourself in more of a hurried state or an appointment, what do you do consciously to kind of bring yourself more into a state of awareness and really open?
Well, anytime you find yourself agitated in any way, the first thing you do is stop. Because any action that takes place when you're a little upset or a little agitated or a little annoyed or irritated or angry or frustrated, that's action, then more often than not, that you'll regret. A word or an action that arises out of anger rarely accomplishes what you set out to accomplish. In fact, it generally accomplishes just the opposite. As an exercise, as a practice, you want to stop several or numerous times during the day. Just come to a halt. Come to yourself. Open up. Be aware of the person in front of you. And consider them as more important than yourself for just a moment. Mm-hmm. And then you continue, you proceed. But these moments of stopping, of coming to rest, give us a break from this continual pursuit of one desire after another that pull us through the day. And then at the end of the day, if we reflect on the day at all, it's almost a blur. We hardly remember most of it. Because in fact, most of it was not registered as a very deep impression within ourselves. It wasn't digested. So it's possible to have these moments where I just wake up, where I stop considering my own desires and just open up to the creation and say, what does the creation need? And what is it that I can provide in this moment? And it may be something as simple as picking up the can off the street, or stopping to listen to a few minutes to a person I met, or deciding where I go this evening to spend my time. Sometimes when I find myself, I say, oh, I'm a little bored or a little troubled, or I don't really quite know what to do with myself. Well, the remedy is always the same. Well, there's somebody that would appreciate a phone call. Mm-hmm. There's someone that if I spoke to, they would be better off for it. And you take the attention off yourself, because that's really what you're bored with. You're bored with yourself. Our own personal melodrama can become quite tedious. Mm-hmm. And we like to get liberated from that from time to time. And the way we get liberated from our own personal melodrama is to attend to the needs of the people around us. And they're always there. Mm-hmm. There's family and there's friends and there's business associates and there's acquaintances and there's other professionals. And in any situation, one person can raise the level of awareness in that room. And that one person is you. And it's done through sacrifice. It's done through renunciation. It's done through putting myself second. But this doesn't mean that we don't, you know, that we live somehow deprived. In fact, we give up our personal desires and we gain everything. You give up your small sense of self, and you realize the universe. It's liberation that we seek, and what we're seeking to be liberated from is our own egos.
Mm-hmm. And I would encourage everybody to go to John's website, thejourneyback.net.
Thejourneyback.net.
Yes.
Thejourneyback.net. Stay with us. More for More Vibrant Living Network. I'm Glenn Brooks. Your life's precious. Enjoy it.
Feed your soul with Waves of Consciousness on Om Times Radio.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Glenn Roach, listening to the Vibrant Living Network with John Adago, who's East West. He's teaching some upcoming programs, which you're going to learn more about. We'll give out his website again. Lisa LaRose, in-resident co-host, explorer. So I'm going to add another dimension to this conversation. So we're talking about how to ask for the moon and receive it. So the question is, how do we learn to ask and how do we learn to receive? So what John said just totally, you know, if I said there was wave one or the initial wave, I feel like so much of what John says resonates really deeply. The thing that I want to bring up that I think is a little bit of a distinction I want to get John and Lisa's comments on is that with all this self-emergent focus, and for the good of others, it's not as if that's a bad thing. It's a self-emergent focus. The last 40 years and a lot of the old monastic practices were, in fact, very focused. So if you look at all the areas of our lives, all the arenas of our lives, the domains of our lives, the relational domain is always the weakest. It's always that's where, because you could be in a cave and you could be in relationship and the person is going to mirror to you things that's going to bring up stuff for you. So I had a relational awakening about seven years ago, and everything shifted, my whole sense of relationship and the wonder of being relationship. And I started to realize the relational path. And so when John talks about come back home to yourself, the idea of how I work with couples now is they come home to each other's heart. So the more aware of the relational impact and also how we integrate our humanness is in the vulnerability. It's in the ability to risk asking and having your partner risk asking for you. The very things that our parents and others around us often push back at us. So what we develop is coping skills, not vibrance, awarenesses. So if there was a shadow or dark side to some of the spiritual path, it pushes us back to this lofty, beautiful, big idea, which John expresses so beautifully. I feel what's missing is this sense of how our relational brain, our relational souls, change us as human beings so we can experience more touch and more love in our lives. And because it used to perplex me, my first awakening was when I was 12 years old. I could never get if people loved each other, why they would ever divorce. It didn't make sense to me. And anything anybody said to me never made sense to me. So when I had this epiphany, which continues to be integrated, and I'm waking down with it each day, it's really this relational question. So as you awaken together, how could you also integrate and bring forward, if you will, the human part to yourself that's been neglected and shunned away by other people that will not get solved by solo meditation? And the idea is we awaken and take things and circle it, or if you will, bring it in the infinity so that we get – awakening isn't just going to heaven. It's integrating things and becoming more awake relationally. And that's what I feel is missing with so many of these solo enlightenment paths. I love your comment, John and Lisa.
Well, as a practical matter, if we want
yes.
to improve or deepen our relationships, when we speak about, quote, communication is not so much about what is being said, but what is being heard. We all love to speak, but more often than not, what's needed is someone who is deeply listening. Listening without judgment or criticism or comparison, just simply open to what's being said. And then when we speak, it's important to know that speech is for the benefit of the listener. Now, again, that's not what normally takes place. We speak because we like the sound of our own voice. We speak because we like to be the center of attention. We speak to make an impression, to perhaps arouse some appreciation in another person. None of that is speech for the benefit of the listener. In order to speak in that way, we have to be awake in the moment. An awake means that we're considering something else besides our own small personal interests. The attention is not on me, it's out. And then I sense or see or hear something about the situation, and then something appropriate could be said. This type of listening is really a profound form of love, and it takes place rather rarely in today's society. In fact, we pay consultants and psychologists, psychiatrists, a lot of money to simply listen, because listening has become a rather rare commodity in today's society. This is something that anyone can learn to cultivate as a practice. And the more he does so, the more capable he is of practicing love and of being of use to the people around him, as well as himself. Because we all seek to say and act in effective ways. We all wish to be acting appropriately to the situation. And yet, as often as not, we find ourselves a little bit out of step, missing the opportunity of the moment. It's because we are not listening.
Lisa.
You know, John, that really does speak to me. I think so many times I think the communication challenges that people have is there's no one listening and people don't feel like they're being heard. And,
right.
You know, when you take that moment, and you're right, it is, that's what real love is about, you know, taking a moment to breathe in and sit down and, you know, look into the other person's eyes and really hear what they have to say. And not be distracted by, you know, well, I have to go to the grocery store later and make up your list. And yeah, you know, and then realize that you didn't even hear one word that the person communicating.
Yeah, because as often as not, while they're speaking, we're preparing what it is we're going to say next.
You're right.
And of course, that's not appropriate because we haven't heard what needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. So I know that you're going to be crafting your new seminars, and people, I'm sure, would be excited, you know, to be able to participate. Is that one of the things that you sort of work with people to help them be more conscious?
If people are interested in these ideas, you begin with reading. And the two books that I've written, East Meets West, which is the story of Gurdjieff and 12 other teachers from the East and the West who devoted their lives to building a bridge across a cultural divide and transmitting the ideas and the spiritual practice of the East to Europe and America. That's East Meets West. And the second book, Ancient Wisdom Can Enrich Your Life Today, is an attempt to put these ideas in a form that could be a self-help book that a person could read these ideas and exercises and practices and stories and begin to get some sense of where to start refining the quality of his life. So both of those books are available on Amazon. And then as we begin to book these seminars and retreats, they will be up on my website, which is thejourneyback.net.
Someone just asked me a question. I want to just the three steps, by the way. Thank you. I love you. By the way, I can see, John, that part of the transfer is actually your nervous system to someone else's nervous system. You're in your nervous system. You have this experience, and that's transferable. So being in person with you is a transferable experience. We learn the most profoundly nervous system to nervous system. As an example, I know someone right now who's studying the way of horses, and she goes to the woods, and she just observes the horses, and she told me it's been totally changing her relationship to stress. Or actually, Hans Solé, the most genius plan, the genius of the stress research was Hans Solé. And he said, it's not about stress. It's about distress or feeling helpless in the face of stress. Now, what are the three things I recommend around asking? And I'm going to give you guys an example and want your comment, Lisa and John. So this woman asked me yesterday, actually, it was my friend Adora. She asked if I could massage or help her with her shoulder. And I realized it's such a beautiful gift when someone asks us.
right? So the first thing I wanted to do is really thank her deeply for asking. And it reminded me, and so I felt when we allow people to ask, or as Lisa was saying, that when we truly listen, there's a different spirit of exchange, there's a different intelligence being exchanged. And it allows people to take the risk. And for many people, it's a big risk to ask. They've been shut down so many times that they've gone to neutral. But when you ask, it allows the other person the opportunity to be bigger and contribute. So it's a profound thing when you ask someone something. So in relationships, one of the highest things is asking. And you could be asking, we had put a seminar together with the surgeon once, and he said, sometimes the patient will just say, could you scratch my shoulder? It's not a linear thing. So when you're with someone, pay attention to what they're asking, and they haven't even brought to words. And when they bring it to words, what I practice more and more is I ask them to keep asking me and asking. I asked someone, must have been nonverbally. I was talking to this guy, Max Green, and he says, Glenn, if you have any challenge, this is about 30 years ago, if you have any challenge, call me at 3 in the morning. I don't care. I called him at 3 in the morning. It's when the movie Big came out. I called him 3 in the morning. I was having a challenge. And he says, Glenn, I deeply thank you for calling me. Thank you for taking me up on the opportunity. So when someone, you ask someone and they offer you, the context of that is so profound. And we rarely ever bathe in that and let that nourish us. So I thanked him so much. It altered my life. It altered my ability to ask. We do classes where people practice asking each other and noticing where they are. Because a lot of times we shut down. As human beings, we shut down. We shrink up rather than participate. So coming to a class and being with other human beings, it changes our nervous system. You can never get that from a book. So asking, by the way, when you ask people already want to give, there's many people who like to give their money. They want to know that you relate to their value. So ask them where they live from. Be a conscious asker. Ask where they live from. A person is very involved in Waldorf education developed by this clairvoyant genius, Rudolf Steiner. You know, need a scholarship, and you tell them why it moves your soul, your child's involved in that, they're going to probably be glad to give you. A lot of times it's so random. See, we learn this from our conditioning. From our conditioning, asking is a bad thing. From our conditioning, we're not, if you ask someone to hold us for 5 minutes, and yet if someone holds us for 5 minutes, it usually re-regulates us, and we probably won't go out and crash our cars. I think Eckhart Tolle wisely said, a car accident is two non-present people smashing into each other. So where's this stuff? How could you put your fingers on this in your life? How could you put your fingers? So you don't always got to divorce and tsunami your relationships. You could actually discover the next level of co-regulation and co-love together. Because every time you jump out of a relationship, you haven't allowed yourself to go to the next cycle of love and embodiment in your body. Lisa? Going to Lisa just then. That was a Lisa call. I felt Lisa's vibration in that. Lisa?
Glenn, you know, as you're talking, it's funny. It keeps bringing me back to what John said, you know, about, yeah. You know, if you have a moment in your day, you know, pick up the phone and call somebody.
Yeah.
And you never know what a difference that might make in their life. I actually had a call from my great aunt's neighbor, very unexpected, on Sunday evening, and it was just a voicemail because I wasn't available to pick up his phone call. Just to hear his voice, and he thought of me enough to reach out and to call me, to take a moment to sing me happy birthday in Russian.
Oh,
it was,
wow,
really, really touching. It really touched my heart. It was really profound. Actually, it was Bulgarian, not Russian. But yeah, you know, I mean, and John, I find, you know, during these conversations, there's so much that you, and I imagine that in your teachings and to be a part of your lecture, there's even greater wisdom. So I do, again, encourage people to go to the journeyback.net and to purchase your book, Ancient Wisdom, then East Meets West, and to really delve into that. So by the time your next seminar's announced, they'll be that much better prepared.
Better prepared for love.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, good. John, thank you for that. These moments when we kind of step out of the small circle of our personal considerations and open up to the creation, this is a conscious moment, and it only may last a few seconds, but it's a conscious moment. It's a different level of awareness that we're all capable of doing. Just stop and open up and consider and be aware of what's around us. These conscious moments are in eternity. These conscious moments are the pulses of the life that nurture the highest and noblest part of the human being. This was the aim and purpose of our life, is to nurture these conscious moments that we might be more of use to ourselves, the people around us, and the creation.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Glenn?
Yeah, no, well, I'm really been appreciating the exploration discussion very much, Lisa and John. And I, what's missing, I think, in our culture now is this experience in person, being in a place that has woods and a stream, and so we can kind of find each other and ourselves together, so that relational awareness and light becomes a shared path. And we see that, we see each other's eyes on the street. Anyway, blessings. Thanks for sharing this program today. I'm Glenn Brooks with the Vibrant Living Network. We're expanding our network, and I so deeply appreciate Chris at Om Times Ready. He's wonderful. I'm so happy to have a partner like him in meaningful media. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Lisa and John.
Thank you.